On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about neighborhoods in Hamilton and how well they've done with vaccines. Joanna Frickatich from the Hamilton Spectator will talk about a new look at the city and a view of how that has worked out. And we are talking to Marianne Okech, who on Wednesday night became the first former McMaster student, the only former McMaster student to become a contestant on Survivor. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
It's been 2 years now. I mean, I think March 13 was the day, right, that everything kind of went squirrely in 2020. So we're coming up on the anniversary of 2 years of living with COVID. And in that 2 years, at least a year, probably more than that, of living with, hey, get vaccinated. We know not everyone has agreed. We don't need to go into all the politics and everything else of that. We know the story. But many, many, many people have. However, it is not universal. And the Spectator and people from the health department looked at neighborhoods in Hamilton to see how we've done as far as getting vaccinated. It's not a similar story. It's not an exact same story all across the city. Joanna Frickatich is the health reporter for the Hamilton Spectator. If there's anybody in this city who knows more about COVID after the last 2 years, I don't know who it is. Joanna, you should be getting some sort of honorary medical degree after all this is done for covering this nonstop for 2 years. I'm telling you, Dr. Frickatich will call you for the rest of the show.
Thanks. Thanks, Scott.
There doesn't appear, when we look at the maps and everything else, there doesn't appear to be a part of the city that isn't heavily vaccinated. Most of the city has been well vaccinated. We're talking about degrees of difference here, right? It's not like 20% and 90%. It's pretty close all across, right?
Well, it is. There is good vaccination, particularly for two doses. I wouldn't say there's great vaccination rates right now for the third dose, but there is good rates. But the disparity is a pretty wide gap between different neighborhoods. And we've seen this throughout the pandemic. We've seen it with school by school vaccination numbers. We have seen it in the public health maps that they have been putting out throughout the pandemic. And now there is this data, which is coming from Ontario Research Institute, ISIS. So it shows fairly consistent divides across different parts of the city.
I think ISIS may want to change its name these days, by the way, but that's a totally unrelated issue. Are there, like, there's lots of theories, Joanna, and there's lots of ideas of why certain places might have higher or lower vaccine levels. Is there a clear-cut logical rhyme or reason why certain places have more and certain places have less?
Well, without a doubt, you see the role that social determinants of health play in this data. That is something that has long been established by the Spectator. Steve Buse did Code Red, which showed how social determinants of health, such as income and education and, a number of different factors come into play to affect your ability to access healthcare. And we really see that. Like, consistently, we have seen that the highest vaccinated parts of Hamilton are in more affluent areas. It is in Ancaster, Dundas, Waterdown, West Hamilton. For example, Dundas has the highest boosted rate in Hamilton, with 58% of its population having three doses. On the other hand, we have consistently seen that less affluent parts of the city, mostly in lower central, lower east Hamilton, that they have the lowest rates of vaccination. So, for example, L8L, their vaccination rate is 32%. So that is, more than a 20 percentage point difference. And L8L stretches from, Ottawa Street North to James Street North and from King Street East to the waterfront.
And just, okay, so people know this, and I want to get back to what you just said. L8S, now, and I'm going by one dose. I we could go two doses, three doses. L8S is the highest area of the city that has at least one dose. People with 96%, roughly. I think that's the Westdale area, if I'm right, looking at the map.
It likely is. Yep.
And L8L, as you say, is below 74%. It's the lowest one. But we talk about, and look, I think you're probably absolutely right. I think all the experts are too, about socioeconomic things that wealthier areas may, for whatever reason, and I'm sure there's lots of theories on this too, have more vaccines. But there are other factors in there. There's language. There are first generation Canadians who may not know or trust the system. There, like, there's a lot of different things beyond just money that we could throw into the mix here, trying to figure out why some are getting it and some aren't.
Oh, absolutely. And all those things are part of the social determinants of health. You know, social determinants of health isn't just about affluence. It's about a lot of different things that come into play that affect your ability to, you know, get health care. You know, it can even have to do with if you're somebody who's working shifts, if you're somebody who doesn't have childcare, things like that can make it a lot more difficult for you to get to a vaccine clinic or to find a way to easily get vaccinated. It's one of the reasons why the city has been focusing on trying to bring the vaccine into those neighborhoods. You know, as we have sort of closed down and moved away from mass vaccination clinics, the focus has really been on trying to bring the vaccine to these neighborhoods to try and, you know, remove some of those barriers that are causing these differences that we're seeing.
And it's a real challenge, I would think, because it would be very simple, I would think, if we could whittle it down to one thing and say, hey, it's just money. If you're wealthy, you're getting the vaccine. If you're not wealthy, you're not. That would be something that is probably pretty easy to work around and come up with a solution. But when you've got so many different variables, boy, it seems like it would become really difficult to figure how you tackle that.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's why, you know, you see that despite the fact that, you know, Hamilton Public Health has tried a lot of different measures, they have had what they call ambassadors, which is people, you know, from the community who try to go to other people in the community and help, you know, promote vaccination. They've worked with community leaders and religious leaders. You know, despite the fact that they have put in all this effort, you know, you still see some, you know, gaps in vaccination, like even in the highest vaccinated areas, there are still people that, you know, haven't been reached there. So, I mean, obviously there are a lot of factors at play here, and there's a lot of different reasons why people make a personal choice to get or not get a vaccine, or why they might have difficulty accessing that. So, you know, it does make it very difficult. There isn't really one solution that will fix this. And Hamilton has had a particularly hard time with this. We have tended to be near the bottom of the public health departments when it comes to our rate of vaccination. And it's not even really clear why that has been. It's not clear whether that has something to do with our rollout, whether that has something to do with our population, whether that has something to do with the social determinants of health in Hamilton. It's really not clear, you know, why we see this and how you fix it.
You know, I don't want to make this a political discussion, but it really does show that you know, simply referring to those who don't get vaccinated as right-wing yahoos doesn't really answer the question, because there's a lot of people who would be living in, I mean, some of these postal codes that you are talking about that have the lowest are staunch NDP or liberal ridings or wards. I mean, it's like there is politics, but there's a lot more to it than just saying they're just anti-vaxxers and they'll never be touched by this. It's a really complex issue.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's not just, not all of these people are against vaccination. You know, some of them, it's just, you know, maybe they're complacent, they don't see the importance of getting it, or maybe it's just that they have really big barriers to getting it. For some people, it's that, you know, there have been mistrust of the healthcare system in the past, sometimes for very good reasons. So, you know, those things all come into play. And even among people who are anti-vaccination, there is a really wide, you know, really wide reasons for that. You can't really boil it down to, you know, one thing. It's not something simple that you can just say, you know, this is what these type of people are like, because it's not like that. It is a really big range. And that is why it's really important that people talk to somebody they trust. Generally, that is how they come to make the decision to get vaccinated in the end, is that, you know, they're able to have discussions, really good discussions with people who take them seriously and who they trust. And that is how they sort of get that confidence to take that step.
The piece, if you want to go to thespec.com, the piece is called How Vaccinated Against COVID Is Your Neighborhood? The really interesting thing in here, in addition to Joanna's writing, by the way, which is great, but there is a map that you can click on, find out where you live in the city and all other parts of the city, and see how you compare to, as I say, other areas. That is honorary for today anyway, Dr. Joanna Friketich, health writer for the Hamilton Spectator, covering COVID for the last 2 years. We're going to have a cake for you, I think, in about 3 or 4 days here when it comes up to the 13th. Joanna, thanks for doing this today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Today is the, well, in 50 minutes from now, the season premiere of Survivor. Now, I don't know how many of you watch Survivor regularly. I don't know how many of you have watched Survivor over the years. I assume most people listening at one time or another have tuned in. Because don't forget, back in the first season, which I think was 2000, I mean, it was a cultural phenomenon. It was something that you talked about around the water cooler when we still did water coolers. I mean, that was the thing. Who got voted off the island? Whose torch was snuffed? There were phrases that were introduced into the lexicon, all because of this show, Survivor. Well, it is still going strong. And tonight begins, I think it's season 43. 43 times, 43 different competitions they've had. And on this season, for the first time, there is someone with a connection to Hamilton. It's only recently that the people who run it allowed Canadians to take part. And this time, this year, this season, there is someone who is a former McMaster student who is going to be a contender on the show. A competitor on the show, hopefully a contender. Her name is Marianne Okech. She joins us now.
Thanks for inviting me, Scott. This is so surreal that it's actually happening.
Well, it goes both ways, because I must tell you, you are living one of my dreams. I am really jealous that you get to do this.
Oh, thank you. I've gotten actually that from a lot of people, including the mayor of my town. So it's so weird that I'm able to inspire people and just be able to live that dream that you might not have been able to live.
Well, the other thing about this that you're doing that I just didn't do, which of course makes this happen for you, is that I've never been like on the ball enough to put in an application. Tell me what was the process? How did you even get onto the show?
You know, I think I was just sitting down. I'm like, I watched the show. I'm like, hey, they're accepting Canadians, so I guess I'm going to apply, because if you love something, you got to do it. And then I think I submitted a tape, and then they called me back, a lot of interviews, and here I am.
And like, what did you do on the tape? How did you stand out from everyone else?
Honestly, in my tape, I just decided I was just going to be myself. So I'm a big talker, big storyteller. So I was just talking to the camera, just said all the stories, all the wild things that I did. McMaster actually got a couple of shout outs in that as well, too.
And were they all true, or did you embellish a little bit to get
them? No, all of them were true. All of them were true. No embellishments from me here. No embellishments.
So when did you find out, or how did you end up finding out that you'd been selected?
You know, I got a call, and then they're like, yeah, you're on the show, get ready. And I'm like, I'm getting ready. And then just had to pack up, had to tell everyone that I was going to Kenya. And then I got to go and film and came back and just kept it up. No one was any the wiser until later when we were announced just about a month ago.
So is that where it was filmed this time, was in Kenya?
No, it was filmed in Fiji. I lied and told everyone I was going to Kenya because I'm from Kenya. So okay. they can't really be like, Marianne, why are you going to the homeland? You know, it's the homeland. You got to go.
So you were under obligation then not to tell anyone that you were even on the show. You had to keep it a secret.
No, only my family knew.
That's got to be tough. If this is something that you've dreamed of doing for a long time and this happens, it's got to kill you to not tell anyone.
Oh, let me tell you, it was so bad because the day before leaving, I volunteer at my church. So my church all thought I was going and leaving for Kenya. So as a goodbye, they decided to go and throw me like a Survivor game to say goodbye. And they're all thinking of going to Kenya. So I'm here sitting down playing the Survivor game. And then my mom knows, so she thinks it's not the most funniest thing. And I'm sitting down, or the worst is when they're going and they're praying for me, praying, being like, Marianne, like, we pray that you have a safe trip in Kenya. And I'm like, I'm going to have to account for this when I get to heaven, because this is so bad. This is like a blatant lie in the house of God.
Yeah. No, you know, not telling anyone is one thing. Lying to the church, that's a tricky one. I don't know how you, that's a tough one. So before you go, what do you actually know? Like how do they prepare you? Do you know anything about the contestants? Do you have any kind of guidebook? What do you know?
You know nothing. You basically fly to Fiji. They kind of give you a little prep about what foods to eat, what foods not to eat, but they really just throw you out there. So like our first initial reactions with each other are the first times we're talking to each other, you know? So it's really that you're just meeting these random people and you got to know how to vibe with them, or you might be the one who's voted out first.
but no binder of here's how you make fire, or no binder of here's the plants that are poisonous, don't step on those, or, you know, whatever. Nothing.
So they taught that to us before the game. Yeah. So they're not going to just be like, oh yeah, oh no, you're going to eat something that's poisonous, should have prepared before you came. They give us that information. They're not just going to throw us in the deep end. They give us like a life vest or something, you know?
What if anything, did you do specifically to prepare? Like, was there stuff that you practiced, or did you go to the gym every day to get in shape, or do you do anything to try to prepare?
So one thing that I did to prepare was I really actually started working out more than I should have. So I went from like zero times to like one time a week. But the really big thing which I did was that I actually, with my therapist, I started to go and talk about like how I can better communicate with people. I had really try to see how others perceive me, so I can really fully understand myself when I'm on that island, to kind of guess how people would perceive me.
You know, that's really smart. On the other hand, that could be really, what's the word I'm looking for? You better be willing to be able to take some criticism of yourself, self-criticism, that what if I'm not as nice as everyone thinks I am?
Exactly. You really have to take that self-criticism. And I feel as if that criticism part I was able to take it, because first you take criticism from the people you love, right? And then when you're able to accept that, you can open up to people who like you're okay with. And then hopefully at the end, when you're on the island, you can accept that criticism from people who you literally have no clue who they are.
I want to ask you a bunch of stuff about the show. Now, I understand, and I want to make clear to everyone here, the show starts on Wednesday. You're not allowed to give any spoilers away. I'm not going to ask you any spoilers, so we're not going to ask you how you did or anything like that. People can watch. But some of the stuff about the mechanics of it, because we don't get to see that kind of thing. So the day the show starts, do they just come and knock on your hotel room door and say, here we go, get your stuff, the game is starting?
It's a wake up and go. It's a wake up and go. You know, you wake up, and you're on that boat, then you're just abandoned. And you see Jeff and you're just like, okay, this game's starting.
Is it a little surreal at the beginning when you're sort of pinching yourself saying, holy crap, I'm actually on Survivor?
It's so surreal. Like, I couldn't stop smiling because I was like, this is actually happening. You know, I've dreamt about this. And it's like, you're on that boat and you're seeing this little stick man from far away. And you're like, wait, no, that's not a stick man. That's Jeff Probst. I'm about to go on an island. And no, I'm about to go on an island when a pandemic is happening with Jeff Probst and all these other people. Super exciting. It was so surreal. Sometimes I'm just driving and I'll still remember that moment. I'll just have a big grin on my face because that was like one of the highs of my life.
I believe that. How old are you, Marianne? Can I ask?
I'm 24, but I was 23 when filming.
All right. So you were only 3 or 2 when the very first season happened. So how long have you actually been watching this show for?
I think I only started in 2018. I started with David versus Goliath, and then I went back and watched all the seasons.
You did?
But yes, I did.
Just because of entertainment, or once you got on and it was for studying purposes?
No, I knew I wanted to apply in 2019. And I'm like, if I'm going to apply on the show, I have to know all the seasons, because I can't be going with a disadvantage with some of these super fans.
So this is, I mean, it's called Survivor, and you are out on an island and you are somewhat abandoned. There's a crew there and stuff, but you're abandoned. So people think, oh, it's a TV show. It can't be that hard. Whether you were there for 3 days or 39 days or whatever the total was this time, you don't have to tell us that, obviously, but is it actually really hard?
It's as hard as everyone has said it is. Like, we're not exaggerating. The game's hard.
So not just, I mean, the social side, I think a lot of people would look at that and say, you know, my brain would just hurt all the time from trying to keep track of who's doing what. But like the physical side, the food and the water, that is really legitimately difficult.
Yes. I'll give you a good example. Let's say you go and you wake up and you're really nervous, so you don't eat breakfast. And then you're running late, so you don't pack the lunch. And then you're now hungry. It's lunchtime. You're like, that's fine. I can get lunch. But when you're on Survivor, there's no lunch. So so even that day one, you're like, yeah, there's going to be no lunch. There's going to be no dinner. So that even like gets you mentally, knowing that you're not going to be able to, there's no end of the line from when you're able to go and satisfy those physical cravings. Mm. And that's starting day one.
When we watch the show and people say, hey, let's go get the water, usually it looks like they've walked just around the corner because they don't show. How far is the water from where the camp is?
It's a decent walk. Not a super long walk, but not a super short walk. It's a decent walk. And when you're hungry, even if it's like one day of hunger, it's a decent walk.
Is it weird having cameras, especially at the beginning, is it weird having cameras in your face and around and looking at you all the time and talking, knowing that everything you say is being picked up?
You get used to it really fast. Like, you're focusing more on being able to be on Survivor, not the cameras, you know?
But and they're I think there.
That, yeah, but so are people who you need to talk to if you don't want to be voted out. So you can focus on the cameras, or you can focus on making sure that people will think you're an asset to the team.
Does it take long to get past the point where you're thinking about every word you say before it comes out of your mouth for fear that the camera's going to pick it up? Like, does it become natural so you really talk like Marianne before long?
Well, you see, before coming out, I got my mother's blessing that whatever I did on the island, she'd still love me. So I didn't care. So I was like, whatever happens, whatever anyone says, my mom still loves me. So I'm good. I'm good to do whatever.
But, you know, like, there have been contestants on previous shows who have said stuff and done stuff that has not just affected them on the show, but it's affected them in real life because people back home make decisions about this person. There has to be something in your mind to say, don't, even if it's in the game, don't say anything so stupid that I come back as a pariah.
I think it's that I came in knowing my self-worth. So I wasn't, that wasn't even a problem that I was worried about. Like, I knew who I was. I knew my flaws. I knew my strengths. So even coming in, and I knew that I had people who love me regardless of, and like who know who I am. So I don't think that was like a big thing. Cause even though so many people are going to watch the show, it's like, I have my support system at home who knows that, who I am. So even if I get negative backlash, there's people who will trust me and will be my ride or dies.
Tell me about the little, I don't know what you, the interviews that everyone does individually. We always see someone sitting with sort of a bush halfway covering them or sitting on a rock or something, and they're doing their individual talk. Do they do one of those with everybody every day?
I don't think I can answer that question.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Is okay. When you do one, how long do they take? Because they show just little clips. Like, are you there for a long, long time if you do one?
Or can't
is
it answer just, that. Sorry.
Can't answer that either. Okay. All right. That's okay. What about challenges? Because we see you guys walk up to do a challenge and Jeff Probst gives a very quick instruction and then everyone does it. No one seems to ever really mess it up. Is there a longer explanation given to you before that we don't see on TV before?
I can't talk about the production behind the scenes.
Nothing.
Just sorry about that stuff. Yeah, I know. They had me tight.
No kidding. That's okay. Oh, hey, listen. Well, okay. Here's the one. Here's the one. And it's indelicate to ask this question, but what about bathrooms?
Oh, bathrooms. I was team aqua dump all the way. Okay. So you have people team in aqua two different dump? Groups. There's two schools of people. There's people who like to go on land and there's people who like to go in the water. So the team aqua dump and team landers. I'm team aqua dump. And the best way to go aqua dump, and I'm so sorry, mom, but you're going to hear this, is butt naked. Because you don't want to get your clothes wet, you know, because it might take a while to dry. So you go, you find a nice spot in the water, then you go and you do your business. Then you come back and you're refreshed. And it's like, and the water cleans, it's self-cleaning. So I'm team aqua dump all the way.
But so there are no like porta potties just around the corner that somebody sees. Like it's all right. It's all natural.
Oh yeah.
You also, by that description though, everybody who is on the show, there has to be a certain level of, well, you know what? We're all here together and we're just going to be open with each other together. There's got to be that based on what you're talking about.
Your standards drop as soon as you see Jeff. Like just plummets to the ground, just on the ground so quickly. Yeah, it's so natural, so normal. We all get used to it.
You can't obviously, and again, I know you're not going to, and you can't tell us anything about how you did or how long you last or anything like that. But what was your strategy going in? Did you have one? Had you thought through how you were going to attack this?
Going into the game, I really knew that my best asset was my social game. I feel as if I'm someone where it's very easy to go and connect with me. And, you know, I'm 5'3" on a good day and I'm not the biggest person there. So I just knew that my best bet was that people would like me socially and want to keep me around. So that's how I went into the game, with that social aspect.
And again, you said you watched every season of it. So as you're watching that, are you picking things up that you applied, or were you more someone who was looking at things that had worked with other people, or were you more someone who was looking at what really hadn't worked and not doing that?
So I actually, before I came on the show, I looked at the most recent seasons of Survivor And I broke down every single vote out from the final eight to the final six to see what went right and what went wrong, to see what my best strategy at the end game was. So it was a science to me. I was searching, I was researching, I was doing it all.
And to the point where, like, taking notes and stuff, or just mentally?
I have a notebook with notes.
Really?
I still have that notebook, yes.
Like a study book that you had broken it down that specifically?
Yes, I did.
And so give me, I don't know if, well, yeah, you can. Give me one example of something that you looked at and you said, you know what, that was a really good thing that someone in a previous season did that really was something I got to make sure that if I get that moment, that's something I'm going to do. What was an example of something that you looked at and said, that was brilliant?
So some of the big things which I really looked at was I looked at people's perceived threat levels when they were playing and then saw what they did in the vote. Specifically, I looked at loser strategy because the winner strategy, it worked for them. So my question was, how could the losers have won? So one of the biggest things which I've noticed is that a lot of times people, like in the final like eight or seven, will go and they'll vote out a consensus vote instead of voting out a big target. So I knew that going into the game, if it was the final eight or the final seven, because you have to assume that you're going to win. And if you're going to assume that you're winning, you have to assume you're a threat. So I was like, okay, so that means that the final eight or seven, you can't go for the consensus vote. That's when you want to go and get someone else out who's big.
It's like, it is here. And as I said it a moment ago, Marianne, I believe that I could do the surviving part, the not eating as much and that kind of thing. But what you're just talking about, the mental side of constantly having your brain going and constantly trying to figure out who's where and who's doing what and who's with who, I would go insane. Like it sounds like it's nonstop. Like even when you're asleep, it's probably your brain is going.
Oh yeah. That's hard. You always are thinking.
That to me is the unbelievable hard part. And it seemed like it was so much easier way back in the day before you even, well, barely when you were born, but it's become very complicated. What did you take at school, by the way, at Mac? Was it something in like the sciences or the study?
Integrated science, yeah.
There you go. So it's exactly what you were. It fell right into your wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah. I love research. So researching the game, same thing.
Now, you, we only have a minute or two left here, but you, about 2 weeks ago, I guess, were finally allowed to say that you were on the show. What has happened to either social media or Instagram or friends out of the blue? Like, have you just been besieged by people?
It's just so weird because like I'll be on Twitter and then I'll see a picture of myself following me. So I'm just, so people have like my picture as like their profile. Or the best thing though that's happened is that I've had people who I haven't connected with for like a long time go and reach out to me. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like that's so cool. It's so nice to go and chat with you again. But like the social media refund has been great.
Well, you know why they're reaching out? Because if you win $1 million, they all want to be your friend.
Nah, that's true.
What will you do if you are the winner? And I'm sure you thought of this going into this. What would you want to do with $1 million? Do you know?
I actually played for the title. So going into the game, I didn't even think about the money. I was just like, I just want to win. I just want to make it far. And I know that sounds so fake and so hard to believe, but I'm saying the truth. I really didn't think about the money. I just thought about the title and the experience.
It is, as I say, it is a very cool thing. A, because a lot of people who have watched this for a long, long time are probably, like me, very, very jealous and probably now inspired to maybe go and fill out one of those, some tape or something, even though, you know, chances are small. You were the one who took it for Hamilton now. So that's, you know, there. But it is a cool thing. And plus, I mean, it's like there's how many reality shows are there now? This is the one that really started it. So it is very, very cool. Marianne Oketch, really appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much for the time today. And it's already done, but good luck because we don't know what's going to happen. So good luck to you.
Thank you so much retroactively.
There you go. Marianne Oketch, look for her on Survivor starting on Wednesday. You can watch her for as many weeks as she is there. And it's a mystery to all of us, except for Marianne, and she's not telling.
You have a great day.
Yeah, that is Marianne Oketch. And yep, she's on tonight. In about 30 minutes from now, she will make her debut on Survivor. Hamilton, well, McMaster student. She's now a seminarian in Toronto. So she has taken her education down the road a little ways. But if you're looking for, if you watch the show, And many people do, if you, because it's still very, very, Survivor does exceptionally well in Canada if you look at the ratings. If you watch the show and you need to have a rooting interest of someone who's as close to hometown as we're going to get, at least until I can get accepted on there and live in the jungle running around in my skivvies and deciding whether to be Team Aqua Dump or Team Landers. Let me just say, I'm not going to be doing any kind of scientific experimentation in the backyard pool to figure out which one I would be. That's a scene from Caddyshack right there. Anyway, there you go. Marianne O'Ketch.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.